don't think it's the right way to act.
Again, speaking on CNN, NBC cameraman Ashoka Mukbo, we just have 20 seconds for you to respond, Ryan, since you met him in Liberia.
Well, I think that he was also doing great work there. He'd been living there for a while, and I think documenting what's happening is very important. But I totally agree with him that the heroes of this response are the Liberians and the Westerners who go and actually are treating these patients, putting themselves at risk. And we need to treat them like returning heroes because they're protecting the rest of us.
Ryan Boyko, I want to thank you for being with us. Third year Yale University graduate student in public health, went to Liberia, returned, and was put in quarantine at his home in New Haven, Connecticut. That does it for the show. I'll be speaking in Maplewood, New Jersey on Thursday. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is more talk radio with hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott. Today, we'll have a discussion about how Oregon may not be quite as progressive as we may think.
By the mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour. Your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews, and interviews, stories of ordinary and extraordinary people working to root down the oppressive institutions of capitalism. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, Monday mornings at 9.
Given how rapidly technology is changing, it's hard sometimes to tell whether the change is for the better or for the worse. One current problem in Portland is a direct result of the growth of the tech industry, rising rents, and gentrification. Tune in this Friday at 11 a.m. for Future Trends in Technology and the Current Housing Crisis in Portland, the final part in Startup City, How the New Tech Boom is Changing Portland.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Volunteers of America, Oregon, committed to helping 17,000 vulnerable people of all ages in our community live better lives each year. You can learn how to help by visiting the website at voaor.org.
Good morning. Today is November 10th, 2014, and you are listening to KBOO Community Radio, 104.3 in Corvallis, 91.9 in Hood River, in Portland, 90.7, and via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.fm. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott, and my co-host is Celeste Carey. Well, the elections are over for the moment, and we will solicit your sage wisdom about what we can glean from those elections. It's interesting to look at the voting results here in Oregon and to look at the county-by-county breakdown of the election results, revealing once again what many of us know, that we are certainly not one state, but maybe at least two states, and depending on the ballot measure, that division may be wide or not so wide. This morning, we would like to engage you, as Celeste and I engage in a conversation about the election result, particularly how progressive Oregon may or may not be. I also would turn your attention to an article that we posted on the website by a Portland resident entitled "The Dream of the 90s is Not Quite Alive in Portland." And in this article, Adam Phillips reflects also on the election, noting the his observations about how progressive Oregon is not, and the work that needs to be done. Mr. Phillips will join us via phone at about 8:30 to share some of his thoughts about this election. So I was one of those who waited till like the last moment to drop in my ballot. You know, it wasn't as if I did not know how I was going to vote. It was just that time suddenly passed by and I looked up and it was election day. What about you, Celeste?
Well, there's a lot of reasons why I like to wait. One of them is it comes from my teenage years when I would actually go to a ballot machine and vote, having grown up in Missouri and then lived in Kansas and California. Name a few places where you actually would go in. And so that's part of that whole heady mixture of change happening and interaction with people. The other thing is really trying to watch and see how issues unfold, see if there's going to be any last-minute spoilers, you know, all of that, the drama that's also mixed with it. I found it interesting to listen to the rhetoric and to watch how people either promoted or didn't promote some of the issues that I thought were really important. And so I'd say the same thing, you know, that last minute dynamic.
So let me also turn your attention, if you are in front of a computer, to go to OregonLive.com/election/2014/general/maps.
Whoa.
So Oregon.live. Oh, gov.Oregon.
Okay, now you got to do it again.
Okay. gov.OregonLive.com/election/2014/general/maps. And if you get there, you will see the Oregon results on the elections county by county. The election for governor and Senate, but also the ballot measures. And so we would, in preparing this program, we focus on two items that, or maybe three ballot initiatives that caught our attention just in looking at how things were divided. GMO labeling, on legalization of marijuana, and driver cards.
Yes.
You know, I think the GMO labeling is still too close to call, and there's probably some ballots that still need to be recounted, and I don't know the technical rules in terms of recounts.
Yeah.
But as it is going down by a few thousand votes right now. But the other measures that we touch upon was
marijuana
legalization, and that passed really 55%, and it passed in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 of the 36 county. And the driver's card measure 88 was heavily defeated, 66-33, and passed only in Multnomah County. And it passed Multnomah County by 11%, 55-45%. So,
So, you know, that indicates some interesting values. This is the conversation that Cecil and I had. And I, on one hand, was not surprised, but I was still disappointed. I know, you know, how can you be disappointed if you're not surprised? But I was disappointed because what I found was we in Portland seem to have a very odd mixture of what people call progressive values. And I don't particularly find them progressive at all. And I say that as a community organizer. I say that as a person of color. I say that as someone who has worked within immigrant and newcomer communities. And I was, well, I was disappointed. And the reason was I found it interesting that we call ourselves progressive, but it seems to really only come into effect when we're discussing what I kind of tongue-in-cheek call libertarian and libertine values. In other words, my personal. When it comes to looking after changes that will really positively affect communities of color, low-income communities, immigrant refugee communities, we are not progressive in the state. We're actually kind of oppressive and regressive. What do I mean by that? You don't see any measures really coming out that help deal with issues of language in schools, and in even ESL is kind of categorized as a I almost want to say hippie yuppie venture. Is that too hard?
ESL?
It's not taken care of as it should be taken care of. It's not supported as it should be supported. Okay, and that's what I mean. There's too often that the right kind of attention is not given. We argue about maybe having to put health and informational language in more than one, I mean, informational items in more than one language, but we don't really take the time to make sure that opportunities to learn English is as prolific as it should be. Okay, same thing with some measures of health care, same thing with allowing people to drive so that they can get back and forth to work. Now, I'm happy that it passed in Multnomah County. I'm not surprised because at least in the counties here, they sometimes get it. But then when it came to more of our more agrarian areas, where you would expect people to recognize the need for folks who are working in those areas to get to work, nobody was willing to pass it. This is not a get out of jail free card. This is just to make sure that people who need to drive learn everything they can about how to drive safely, and have the opportunity. So here we are. We're good to have our marijuana, and we're good to have, you know, other personal freedoms. But when it comes to economic freedoms, or cultural freedoms, or social freedoms, we're not so good.
And Adam Phillips, who will join us later in the program, touches upon that in terms of bringing up the same points you made in terms of the fact that we do not yet seek to promote the common good, the common welfare.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you our calls. We have a couple of callers online. Share your perspective on the elections. How progressive are we and what needs to be done? Our numbers are 503-231-8187, or you may email us at moretalkradio@gmail.com. Jake, you're on the air. Thank you for waiting.
Yeah, thank you so much for the conversation. Celeste kind of just took all the words out of my mouth.
I'm sorry.
No worries. It's good to hear somebody else. And I'm excited you guys are having Adam on later. He's a friend of mine, and that article is really phenomenal. But, yeah, I agree with you completely that we have this kind of strange form of progressivism where predominantly, you know, obviously it being Portland, white liberals can kind of put on the costume of progressivism, and we, you know, pass marijuana legalization, but then when it comes to passing, you know, we decriminalize marijuana, but we have not decriminalized people, which is such a backwards form of progressivism that allows people to pat themselves on the back, make them feel like they're making big changes. But, you know, we've had the war on drugs, which has been a racist policy for such a long time, and that is still in effect. But when all of a sudden a bunch of white people want to be able to smoke some weed, we all of a sudden pick up the flag of progressivism. But when it's for somebody else, for their color, for their freedom, for their justice, you know, all of a sudden Portland has been largely silent. You know, we've had a hugely horrendous racial past of disenfranchisement, and we're not moving forward on any of that stuff. And it just seems completely backwards to me that we're, you know, we're willing to pick up the banner for marijuana, but we're not willing to pick up the banner for people. And it really saddens me and makes me question a lot of Portland's progressivism, which seems to be, like you said, Celeste, just a form of libertine or libertarianism.
So let me ask you, Jake, what do you think that needs to be done to move beyond that?
Or can we?
I mean, I think we need to call it what it is and let people know. Like, you know, we have a lot of folks who are claimed to be leaders of progressivism and social justice in this community, but are just enacting white privilege over and over again in that. And I think that they need to be aware of it and be told what they're doing is, you know, we need to point it out and say what it is. But at the same time, find those people that are actually doing it.
Jake, did we lose you?
And, you know, gather behind the actual good causes. Because I think in Portland, we often splinter around so many different issues, which is good that everybody has their own cause, but sometimes there's not as much unity as there should be.
Well, you know, is calling it out enough? Because I don't feel like it is. I feel like we call it out often enough, but it's being ignored.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. Adam and I and a bunch of other folks as well have been gathering around this question, and I know it's not a new question, and it's not like some new people are doing any. You know, we're gathering around it. That doesn't mean that all of a sudden there's going to be a solution, but yeah, I mean, it's a important question, and I don't have the answer, but that's why I'm listening to you guys, right?
Well, that's why we all get together and keep the discussion going, and thank you so much for starting it.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you, Jake. And let's go to our next caller. Marilyn, share your wisdom with us.
Good morning.
Good morning. yes, I had done some thinking since the last election, and I grew up in Mississippi, which is not very progressive. Mm-hmm. So there is like a gradient here, mm-hmm. on how, you know, how progressive compared to what. And I also don't think that people realize how much impact Citizens United is having on our elections. That you have all this money coming in from who knows where, from, you know, maybe China, the drug money or whatever, destroying our elections. And we have this corrupt Supreme Court that has brought back Jim Crow voting laws. And here we sit around and we are blaming Democrats for not being progressive enough. So, but yeah, and that's what it kind of looks like to a lot of people, is that the Democrats are fell down on the job. But you have to consider what we're up against, and have to consider the nature of the dark money and the opposition.
So I think you raised a really good point by looking at the influence of money, and certainly on this program and other programs have focused on Alex and on Citizens United, as you mentioned, and in terms of their ability to push their agenda. What do you think that we do not have the same sort of money that they have, and the Supreme Court is what it is, and the political parties are what they are. What do you think we can do to begin to establish a turnaround or a change in direction in terms of in this country in general, but more particularly here in the state of Oregon?
Well, I think we have to hold Oregon high where it belongs. It's a fabulous, wonderful state and a very special place to live and work. And I think we have to appreciate what we've got very strongly and aggressively. And
actually make it a fabulous, wonderful state for everybody, perhaps?
Okay, but we're working on it.
I hear what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to not put ourselves down too much because we're not good enough yet, but because we are working on it, and the ballots are they are up for the voting, and unlike many, many other places where you could live and never see anything even remotely progressive. But that problem of the money and the Supreme Court and all of that, I don't know what to do about that.
All righty. Well, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it.
So you're listening to...
We appreciate you guys.
Hey, mm-hmm. Hey, thank you, Marilyn. And you are listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil. I'm here with Celeste.
Good morning.
We're speaking about the elections and how we tend to be vote progressive, but still oppression continues
yes.
in our midst. Two callers. Jake mentioned the Oregon's history and white privilege and the need to call people on our stuff and really to dismantle privilege in mm-hmm. our nation to begin to in our state to begin to make it a place good for all people. Marilyn just called. She shared her perspective. You know, coming from Mississippi, Oregon is a lot better place, and she thinks that but she points to the influence of money in politics,
and especially external money and perhaps criminal money.
Yeah. So let's go to and Adam Phillips, who wrote the article, The Dream of the 90s is Not Quite Alive in Portland. It's on sojo.net. You can look it up. We put a link to it on our page. He'll join us in a few minutes to share his perspective. But we'll go to our next caller right now. BJ, good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Hey, if one of you could call back after... you can get my number from Steve, but I don't want to go to it over the air right now because I don't know. I'm having difficulty having caregivers and house people here, and I live in my own home, and there's a real effort of the human resources to try to take seniors' homes or put them in care facilities at high costs, very high costs,
mm-hmm.
$5,000 a month and up. And I want to live in my own home. I've had to work real hard, and I've been in the military for hard, and tomorrow is my day of rest in the military. I've spent many years in doing that, and I don't see a way to get around this unless there is control on the money, who's got it, and we have better... We can't assassinate presidents. If you listened to Coast to Coast last night, and there's a book by a man came out about it. You can get it down at Powell's, probably came out yesterday. And it's about the real conspiracy and connecting the dots. I forget his name. It was interesting. It was did you hear the program?
No,
I
don't.
Unfortunately, I didn't.
You
so
really should.
It
makes this whole thing connected.
Okay.
This has happened way before Kennedy was assassinated. It's connected with the Third Reich and the 1,000 Nazis that came here. They were in the SS, which is a very elite group that is not a club like we have, a Kiwanis or something like that. It
right.
is a special order of murderers, killers, and they are... here.
Okay. Well, we appreciate
good. Yeah, the information, yeah. And we really want to thank you for your contribution to the yeah. country's security.
Would you please call me back because something is big happening?
Okay. Did you leave your number with Steve?
Steve has it.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I'll leave it.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
And we want to remind you that you're listening to your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in Points East, and 104.3 in Points South. This is More Talk Radio. The phone number is 503-231-8187. And let's see, we still have a few moments before our guest calls in. We'll go to Chris. Thank you for holding.
Hey, how's it going?
It's great.
Yeah, so a few things. It's a really interesting discussion. I'm just glad that you guys opened this up for everybody to be able to kind of reflect and or decompress after the elections. And I just wanted to respond to a couple of things. So one of the things that I took a geography class at PSU, and one of the things that I realized in taking this geography of the Pacific Northwest was that our whole notion of sustainability really has its origins in the discovery of the Oregon Territory at the time that it was kind of, you know, in, and I say discovery with air quotes, because there are already people living here, right? But by Western white European explorers who came out and saw this pristine land of beauty, because the people who were already here were actually living in harmony with their surroundings, and they were not, you know, destroying their environment. And so it was intact when European explorers moved out west. And that is really where we get this idea of this idyllic, pristine setting that we live in, and it's persisted, and the city of Portland and the state of Oregon and the region of the Pacific Northwest have all leveraged that idyllic kind of nostalgic sensibility ever since as a way of branding ourselves as progressives. And so really I think we have to look below that and realize that plays a huge part in this projection of our region and our city and our state as a progressive state. It really has to do with the natural beauty that is so marketed and focused on as part of who we are. And then when we realize that that's where that's coming from, we can begin to look at issues of, you know, race and see how backwards it is. And even issues of gender and gender identity, once you go outside of our, you know, our large city centers. And then the other thing I wanted to touch on was what Marilyn was saying about the Democratic Party and coming to Oregon from Mississippi. And, yeah, there are degrees of progressivism for sure. And I bet Oregon is a lot better than Mississippi right now. But what we have to realize is that dark money that Marilyn was talking about is actually infiltrating the Democratic Party, so that whether you're talking about, I just heard Glenn Ford has this incredible lecture on YouTube about Cory Booker and his origins in the right-wing Bradley Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting lecture, and I highly recommend it. He talks exactly about how right-wing money infiltrated the Democratic Party through a figure like Cory Booker. Mm-hmm. But even coming back to Oregon here and looking at Kitzhaber and the way that he has completely reshaped the structure of our education system in the state, yes, by creating the OEIB, mm-hmm, by taking the state superintendent, which was an elected position, and turning it into an appointed position, that's all big money. That's all the interest of big money. And so we have to be real careful to shield Democrats from, you know, blame because, you know, they're more progressive than the Republicans. We have to understand that they are increasingly two sides of the same corporate coin that are both being influenced by money. And now the Democratic Party has become a more useful tool than the Republican Party in some ways because of our continued belief that they are the more progressive party.
Sure.
And and that is really undermining what is left of our modicum of democracy in this country is that we perceive the Democratic Party as still having some sense of liberal values, but as, you know, analysts like Chris Hedges will say, that the liberal class is gone. We no longer have a democratic safety valve to channel radical angst and anger away from radical action. And so what we're going to see, I think, is stuff's going to get worse, and people are going to have nowhere to go with their anger and frustration, and we're going to start seeing, you know, more Fergusons, more people in the streets, for not for days, but for weeks and months.
Sure.
And, you know, if that's what it takes, then that's what it takes. So that's my whole analysis of this election is the money's there. It's influencing Democrats and Republicans and the people on the ballot level. And, you know, I just think we have to get ready for stuff to get a little bit worse and a lot more serious.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for your analysis. I hope you're very thoughtful. I hope you continue to talk with people, and maybe where someone can read your analysis, that would be great.
And also to consider support for third party politics, perhaps. Maybe
exactly
it's just
right.
not, you know, the two polls.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Yep.
Okay.
Start with the people, though.
Yes. Okay. But thank you so much for your call.
Thank you, guys. Keep doing what you do.
Okay. So, this is More Talk Radio. It is Monday morning, is it not?
It feels like it.
It is.
You know, my little gauge says Monday.
Monday. I'm Cecil Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey.
And we're speaking about the elections, particularly about some analysis. We tend to think Oregon is progressive. The results of the election says maybe not so much.
I'll just say the results of the election say we are definitely not. If this state has not, one of the things that Oregon likes to pride itself on being, and especially Portland, is a quote unquote foodie paradise. Okay? How can we be a freaking foodie paradise and we're okay with not knowing what's in our food? I don't understand that. And when people on a grassroots level do not vote for their interests, and they decide that it's okay to have food that's unlabeled, it doesn't speak to a progressive state of mind. It speaks to willing to allow yourself to be swayed by fear-mongering.
Right.
I like to read the label and find out, for example, is there high fructose corn syrup in my food? Because I don't do well with it.
So I think that's a reflection in part of what some of the callers mentioned, the influence
like
of money.
Like big money, external money.
But I also
feel it's an influence on, what's the word I want? It's a result of us. Okay, some got updated. It's the result of us not paying attention to the information that kind of reveals a deeper story. If somebody tells me it's going to cost me too much and I don't really need to know what my food is, why do I accept that? What level of education have I missed to be willing to accept that?
No.
You know, and so that's part of what I see as a regressive state of mind. But we do have our guest online.
So joining us is Adam Phillips, who wrote a blog entry that is a play on Portland, you know, Portlandia, and you know that little tune, the Dream of the 90s, or something like that. So his article was The Dream of the 90s. It's not quite alive in Portland. Adam wrote this insightful article, I think, on his reflection on the elections, and he's joining us this morning. Adam, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Hey, thank you so much for being available for us, and perhaps we can begin. I enjoyed reading your article for many reasons, but also like your style in terms of how you wrote it. Tell us something about you. You are a relatively recent immigrant to the region. Tell us a little bit about your history, why you moved here, and what are some of the things you discovered since you've been here.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's good to be on the show with you both. My name's Adam Phillips. I'm pastor of a new church in town. It's called Christ Church, and we are only 8 months old, and we currently gather in what we call Inner North Northeast Portland. We're kind of right around the right around that divide there. We meet at the Friends of the Children on Sundays at 4:30.
So you know well what's happening on Williams and all of that development.
Oh, yes.
Oh, totally, yeah. And I live right off of Williams, so I'm quite aware of what's going on. And even when we moved here, we were aware of what was going on for some time, but have since learned so much more in the 14, 15 months we've lived here in Portland. We moved here from the East Coast. We were living in Baltimore. I was working in Washington, D.C. for an advocacy organization called the One Campaign. And so social justice issues and advocacy are very close to my heart, and feel very, committed to this immigration fight as well. I've been working on that in some small ways and some bigger ways since 2006 when I was living back in Chicago.
So, you moved here, started a new church, active in immigration issues. What were some of your impressions of Oregon and Portland before moving here? And what are the things you discovered, particularly as you got to know the area more and in terms of the local communities?
Yeah, before we moved to Portland, I think we were aware of, I did make that joke about Portlandia, the dream of the 90s. It's kind of a funny joke there. I think the song goes in one of the episodes, the dream of the 90s is alive in Portland. It's where young people come to retire, right?
Yes.
And it kind of makes folks fun at people, much like myself, who are moving to Portland to try to build families and communities in a place that has all of these wonderful, in some ways, the food scene and bicycling and all of that that comes with that. That was certainly one piece of our understanding of Portland. But, when we started to think about moving here, I kind of dug in deeper into the history of Portland and Oregon generally. And, I grew up playing the Oregon Trail video game. And so you kind of get that idea of what immigration to Oregon was like back in the day. Uh-huh. But then you begin to uncover some of the real kind of dark history of Oregon and the exclusionary laws and sundown towns. And it is definitely a complex, weird place. I'm so glad we live here. I'm so glad we live in the neighborhood we live in, even though it's gone through this really, really tragic in a lot of ways. Period of gentrification, but we live here and we're trying to do as best we can in our neighborhood to bring up these issues and help educate people that may have even grown up in Oregon and not known any of these stories.
So how do you in your article you write passionately about the immigration issue and observe that it passed only in Multnomah County, but you also quite honest about who you are and about the people that you work with. One of our earlier callers mentioned the need to bring up these issues to talk about privilege. And most people, I think, who fits the profile may not know about the history, as you said. And most people, can probably consider themselves as young progressives. And the issue of privilege might be difficult to raise or talk about. How do you address those issues with the people you work with?
Yeah, I think addressing issues of privilege, issues of white privilege, are incredibly important to how we understand and begin to understand who we are and what we might actually be responsible for, or at least responsible for helping to stand in solidarity with folks that have no privilege. I'm a pastor. I describe myself as a straight, white, married man with privilege, and that's something I am. I'm born privileged because of my whiteness, because of my maleness. So this has been a discovery for me over 10 years of just kind of unpacking what it looks like to be a privileged person in this country, no matter where we live. I mean, these issues of gentrification, these issues of dislocation, these issues of privilege and racism are nationwide. And so being here
in Portland helps us understand a very local context. And I'm a guest in so many ways. I'm a new immigrant, as you described as well. So I don't have all the answers for Portland. I don't have all the answers for Oregon, but I do have a sense that we have a call here in this town to listen and learn, and then to stand alongside and tell stories and fight for social justice where we can and do our part where we can.
You're listening to More Talk Radio with my name is Cecil, and we're speaking with Anne Celeste. I'm sorry.
No, you're okay.
We're speaking right now with Adam Phillips, who is the author of an article in Sojourners, The Dream of the 90s is Not Quite Alive in Portland. We're speaking generally about the election results, the lack of progressive reality in our state, and the work that needs to be done.
So, Adam, one of the things I'd like to ask you is, what do you think has contributed to the results that we've experienced here in the election? Why do we have this bizarre kind of gap in what I've labeled progressive but still oppressive, and a focus on libertarian and libertine values, but not on human values?
Mm. Yeah, that's such an important question. I think that what's going on is that we're really seeing that some of our progressive ideals aren't as progressive as we think they are. I think that I think a lot of folks are you know, really committed to important things. Like, we saw the GMO labeling fight as well in the election, and legalization of marijuana, and those are sort of labeled as liberal causes or progressive ideals, and I think that they are in a lot of ways, and yet so many progressives don't connect over to the more human issues of human solidarity, civil rights, fighting income inequality, and so something is missing here. I wonder often, is it that we've become too consumeristic in our tendencies? So we might be liberal or progressive in our shopping tendencies or in our habits or our buying power, but then we don't quite know the stories of our neighbors, and we don't quite have relationships, in fact, that help us understand that to be progressive is not just simply to vote for progressive ideals, but to stand in solidarity for the common good. And that common good is something that, for me, comes out of my faith tradition. It's something that, you know, I hear Jesus describing as the kingdom of God. And so these are not just, you know, stickers we put on genetically modified foods. These are families and individuals that we are called to stand in solidarity with.
So, like, maybe as a progressive, we might need to redefine our ideas of what compassion and being our brother and sister's keeper actually mean.
Yeah. I mean, compassion is literally suffering with, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Have a heart with. So,
it occurred to me that, you know, in your article, you mentioned the GMO, and Celeste just mentioned it also, spoke passionately about it.
But
and what you just said in terms of individual, you know, want to make sure that we, you know, eat food that
is food instead of Soylent Green.
And so we vote for that, yet we don't care, as you suggested, for the people who supply us the food,
right?
The farm workers, who are literally on the front line. So there's a disconnect there. We have a couple of callers online. Let's see if they would like to engage you with some conversation, Adam.
Okay.
Good morning, Tom. Tom? Hello? If you've got your phone and radio engaged at the same time, turn your radio down. Okay, we're going to go to Maryland.
Yeah, hi there. Yes, I heard exactly what we kind of expected from the previous caller, that the Democrats are just as bad as the Republicans. And I want to ask people who passed the Citizens United in the Supreme Court, who appointed that Supreme Court, and who is behind all of this sabotage of our elections and sabotage of our democracy. And they want to kill the unions, they want to kill the Democrats, they want to kill the environmental, they want to kill the EPA. And we cannot tolerate such a thing, and it will destroy our society.
Okay, thanks, Marilyn, for calling again and sharing your thoughts. So she has a difference of opinion from some earlier callers who see a pox on both your houses, and mm-hmm. her perspective is that the real difference. Adam, I want to ask you a little bit more about how do we stand with our neighbors and friends and walk with them. Did you find it? I think one of the challenges is that it's difficult to approach people who are different or communities that are different. How do you suggest for us to get out of our own comfort zone to, mm-hmm. to really get to know our neighbors?
Yeah, I think we need to reimagine what the neighborhood looks like, what the city looks like. The city is not just a place where we play, where we go and go out to eat, or we go to a show, and those are certain things I love doing here in Portland. But the city is a place of neighborhoods. And so how do we engage our neighbor? How do we find neighbors? How do we connect with our neighbors? Do we even know the neighbors on our street? And so I think that's one step that we can do. And at Christ Church, we're trying to be a church that collaborates and partners with people of faith or people of no particular faith in the neighborhood. And so we just co-sponsored an event two Saturdays ago around race and police accountability with the Albina Ministerial Alliance. And so that's one way in which we can get to know our neighbors and get to hear stories and not just pray with them, but also roll up our sleeves and go to work for a better community for everyone.
And as you reach out and get to know our neighbors, how do you caution people against disappointments? Things may not always go well. You know,
It
takes a while.
Yeah. Yes, the impossible may take a while.
Yeah, that's where prayer is helpful for me. That's where prayer is helpful. But also just learning patience and learning that this is not a it's not a sprint, but it's a marathon. And how do we have a long view towards progress and wins? And that's going to come with, election cycles. But, the day after an election, we still have to go to work, and we still have to be good neighbors, and we still have to ask ourselves, what part can we play this week for a city that's truly, truly good for everyone that lives here? That's one thing.
Well, I want to try to take it to a practical level. Now, for you and I, we will see a change agent as prayer. A lot of people may not see it that way. And so when we talk about engaging, when we say we need to get the word out, for some people, we really need to get just really basic with how to do that. What are the steps? And so to help people recognize ways to get out and take an issue and engage, what would be some grassroots suggestions that you might offer people so that they can actually hear the 1, 2, 3 steps of how to get started talking to your neighbor about things that are really important for all of us? In other words, how do you sit down with your neighbor face-to-face and engage in compassion? In other words, that feeling with, that suffering with, that becoming of like minds.
Yeah, a couple things come to mind. I think simply introducing yourself to your neighbors on your block and just getting to know folks. And that could start very slow. That could start around talking about, your children or the schools that your kids might attend, or even the dog that you have, and just kind of getting to know your neighbor that way, and then but being persistent, and you don't want to be rude and go too fast, and they can I
can I learn everything you have to share about the neighborhood?
Right, right.
But you just day by day and week by week just build relationships. That's just one really practical way. Mm-hmm. I think another way that we could go about this is, you know, social media is this incredible tool and it can connect us in so many ways to community forums and events. And but the trick of that is to actually show up. So to get offline and show up to a community forum or a discussion on, what are we going to do next after Measure 88? Talk to my friend Paul Reek, who is an organizer on this issue in town, and connect with him online and then ask him, you know, where offline are we meeting next? What's the next thing that I can do to just show up and listen and then communicate to others what's happening? You know, we live in this incredibly dense world of communication, and sometimes the online stuff can create so much noise that we miss the moments for offline, you know, grassroots organizing. So I encourage people to look at those things as tools and just kind of, you know, like the newspaper used to be, but pick up those tools and show up offline.
Wow. All right, great.
Those are incredible. We have a caller online. Rainer, good morning. Your thoughts, please.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I don't quite understand how the marijuana initiative can be lumped into non-progressive, but what about all the people who are in prison that non-violent prisoners and so forth, and you talk about the drug war. Well, mm-hmm. To get rid of the drug war, drugs have to be legalized, and that's the first one. And it, affects the whole country in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
So, to lump, the marijuana initiative into some anhedonic type concept of unprogressive and libertine, that seems absurd to me.
Okay.
Well, I can appreciate. Well, wait, so, don't go away. Don't go. Okay, so much for engaging. One of my concerns and one of the reasons why I do to a degree lump this in is, first let me say this first and foremost. When it comes to medical use for marijuana, having been a nurse and actually having done hospice care, especially on one of my friends that had cancer and having to give him the capsule form, which was, what was available at the time, I was all for that. I'm a little perturbed at some aspects of the recreational use, and that will be a topic for another show that Cecil and I are working on.
And we do tend to disagree on marijuana.
Yeah, and we tend to disagree. You know, I have some concerns about how it may be implemented, but I find it interesting that we can be really educated about the benefits of marijuana, but we don't seem to understand, number one, how important it is to know what's in your food. Like, how many of you know that for some brands of bread, you're basically eating what kind of amounts to Soylent Green? Are you aware that L-cysteine in a lot of bread products in this country comes from human hair? You know, that's not something I really want to, I don't want to eat that kind of product without knowing. So people are okay without that. They're okay with making sure they have their recreational marijuana, but they're not okay with somebody driving to work to help produce the food that you eat, you know, or getting an okay way of driving legally without having to worry about being caught because they're driving illegally, or just being able to get out from under whatever kind of conditions might keep them in a more oppressive way of getting to work. Some of the migrant farm workers will tell you they may not have transportation to work. They might have to rely on a less than effective or less than affordable way of going to work, which means they might get picked up by somebody to take them to work and they have to pay extra money for that. When if they can have their own transportation means, they can get out from under that particular type of oppression. And so I find it funny that we're really good at getting our personal liberties taken care of, but we're not looking for our neighbors' economic well-being, and that's what bothers me.
And I don't think that legalizing marijuana is not a liberal idea. I think, but I think what I'm gaining from you, and certainly from Adam, mm-hmm. is that we need to expand
it.
What it means
right.
for us to be a progressive community.
And for the record, I think he said his name was Brainerd or Kennard. Brainerd, okay. I do not support the idea that we should have restrictive drug laws that criminalize people for certain kinds of drugs. There's certain kinds of what I would call maybe soft drugs. I think that it's all subjective, you know, but that's another conversation.
And we have a few minutes more, and before we let Adam go, I want you to share a little bit, Adam, in terms of what type of response. I tend not to look at comments on blogs because
yes.
sometimes
they're ignorant.
You know, people are, you know, anonymous and say ugly things. But what type of responses have you seen from your article?
I've gotten a lot of encouraging response from friends and people in the community. You know, I try not to read comments. Either sometimes that folks that might not actually read the piece and critique it
mm-hmm.
just based on a headline.
Or they may not actually have a brain or opinion and they critique it.
Yeah. So, you know, I've had a good response. You know, I'm part of a larger movement of churches. Our church is part of the Evangelical Covenant Church, and mm-hmm. we're part of the Evangelical Immigration Roundtable. And so this is something that's a crucial concern of churches across the country. And so Measure 88 was our attempt here in Oregon to move the ball forward a little bit, and we're very disappointed and sad that hasn't happened. But now we have to ask ourselves, okay, well, what's next? You know,
mm-hmm.
President Obama still has not passed any kind of immigration reform, something he's been promising for 6 or 7 years now. So mm-hmm. we need to say, okay, well, what's the next step that we can make at the local level, at the state level, and nationally? And so I've had encouraging words from folks that are in that fight inside and outside of Oregon, because they, you know, that's the question we need to ask. Like, what's next? How do we move forward out of this really disappointing moment?
This last weekend was a very emotional weekend for many people involved in the immigration reform. And some people may be aware of Augustana Lutheran Church in Francisco yep. Aguirre. And the roller coaster ride he and his family and the community had about that. But last night, you know, there was a community interfaith service there, and people recognizing that there's a lot of work that needs to continue, and that there are 11 million of our sisters and brothers who are living in the shadows, and that we need to continue the hard work. So if anything, Measure 88 reveals that a lot more work needs to be done as we learn how to reach out and share with our neighbors about how to live in community.
Yeah, and when we look at these immigration laws, we see that they're just completely broken. They might be, in fact, legal laws, but they're completely immoral. And we have to ask the tough questions of our legislators to say, hey, we need to have laws that reflect the values of who we say we are. I was just up in outside of Tacoma last weekend on a listening and learning tour of around immigration, in fact, and there's something called the Northwest Detention Center where they
and we have about 30 seconds.
Yeah. Anyway, mm-hmm. do what you can to learn about the Northwest Detention Center. It's a place run by Homeland Security and corporations, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's just this horrible place in which people are held for up to 30 months or more simply for being undocumented.
Hey, thank you, Adam.
Thank you very much,
Phillips, for joining us. I'm pastor of Christ Church in North
and sharing your information in the blog and being active in our community.
Well, thanks so much, and it was a pleasure to join you all.
And we're coming to the end of our program.
That's right. Stay tuned. And when we talk about being the community connection, that means getting out and talking to each other face-to-face, as Adam said. My suggestion: have a bread meeting. Everybody bring some gluten-free, non-GMO bread to share. Yeah, one way can, to meet your neighbors.
Yeah, if we can find it.
Yeah, well, you have to make it yourself.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Yeah, with non-GMO products.
But it's not labeled, so how do
Oh, my goodness. Hey, you know, we just need to do our research, talk, and pray.
Okay.
Organic is the word. Anyway, stay tuned because you've got more information coming up with the Old Mo Variety Hour here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland.
Artichoke Music, Satori Men's Chorus, and Mark Bosnian will present Songs of Community, a benefit for KBOO Community Radio, Thursday, November 13th, 7:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. This concert celebrates Portland's love for local music and local community radio. Tickets are available in advance from Brown Paper Tickets or at the door. All proceeds benefit KBOO. To learn more, go to the KBOO website and click under Community Events on the right side of the homepage. That's KBOO.fm. Songs of Community, a benefit for KBOO Community Radio.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about